go, Ball Talk Fanatic, or Jordan Flegel. Game 2 recap, NBA Finals 2025. Thanks for being here with us. The big dogs giving you the takes that make you quake. Shout out to the Dog Pound members out there. Jordan, like it's been a wild, kind of few days here. We've had very different experiences through Game 1 and Game 2, the very different outcomes. From start to finish, really. Game 2, a little bit less exciting than Game 1. We're going to get right into the nitty-gritty of it as soon as we can. But I do want to say, Jordan, I want to officially declare it, you weren't aware. Officially, it's summer. It's officially summer. Yeah. I'm declaring it. Summer is here. It's hit. I'm ready to finally establish this. Because yesterday I had my first patio beer of the year, Jordan. And wow. My God, the sunshine on me. Even though, I'm still trying to cut back on the drinking, it went off the rails as it often does. I did really enjoy that. And, that really made me feel like, things are getting brighter. Sun is shining a little bit brighter and, the warm air is hitting different. So, congratulations to everyone. We made it to summer. We're finally here. We did it.
Yeah, we did it. Speaking, this is a crazy time for you to bring it up, Matt, yesterday and then the day before. So Saturday and Sunday, I swam both days outside. Once in Lake Ontario. That was cold. That was very cold, but it was nice. It was so hot here that it was manageable. But it was open Lake Ontario. For those who don't know, still pretty damn cold this time of year. Still refreshing. And then just a smaller lake that was like straight up comfortable. It's been so hot around here that it was warmed up. There was people out there jet skiing yesterday. There was families barbecuing at this little beach that I went to. So yeah, summer is here all of a sudden. Feels good. But that means the basketball is winding down. It's what we're talking about. Yes. Soon there will be nothing to talk about. But summer's in full swing. I even caught some fucking the smell of barbecue on the air yesterday. Almost made me almost made me pass out. It smelled so good.
Well, shit. Actually, this is a good time. Then maybe I do have something a little more interesting to mention before we get into it.
What the hell happened to you?
Kind of a funny story last week, man. Because I barbecue pretty much year round. as long as it's not like completely like snowy, I will barbecue. Ever since I've gotten myself one.
Yep. Everything's you're gonna become one of those fucking guys who smokes meat. You're gonna be like, 100%, I've got this brisket. It's been on here for 2 weeks.
I would love that. Have you ever really had like a smoked brisket or anything like that, man? It's different. It hits different. I would love to become that.
We're gonna be at the cottage having been up there for like 3 days, and you're gonna be like, oh, I gotta check my app with a meat thermometer. You're checking your meat back home that you're gonna take off. I see that for you.
Calling Vanna just to tell her to go and throw it on there for me. Get started. Yes. Yeah. Make sure the juices are still flowing. I was barbecuing. We made some ribs. I was just getting them nice, getting a little gristle, getting a little crisp on them. But Jordan, this is my reminder out there to everybody this summer season, clean your barbecue out. I had been putting it off. I hadn't been cleaning it as much as I should have. And, I've got it going. I'm sitting there, I'm just chilling, listening to some music. I'm like, oh, this is nice. This is a very, but maybe this was, I was like, God, is summer here? Can I declare it early? open up my my grill, and the flame is fucking going, man, because it wasn't quite a grease fire, but there was a big flame from underneath. Obviously, too much charred shit underneath there, and I was like, oh, okay, so this is a problem. So immediately turn off the gas. I'm moving the ribs onto the top part, getting it away from the fire. Some dude drives up after I'm already like dealing with this. Hey, the fire's coming from underneath your grill. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Thanks, like, pal. I didn't fucking know, man. But, it is what it is. He was trying to help, but I was just like, this is already embarrassing enough. I salvaged it. It was all good. I avoided any kind of giant explosion or having to call the fire department because at the moment, I was like, for a second, I'm like, what the fuck am I even going to be able to do here if this fire really gets out of hand? Because we don't have a fire extinguisher. We don't got anything like that. I don't think I could throw water on it. So yeah, it would have been a scary situation there for a couple seconds. We persevered. We got through it, and the ribs still turned out pretty good. We made it through.
Good. Amazing. Yes. Well, yeah, that's that sounds a bit risky, Matt. I mean, I thought you were going to tell me that you lit up like a family of squirrels that had nested in there. That sounds like something you'd do. If I was there, I'd have been like, fuck it, let's try this meat. If that
100%.
What went down.
If it's cooked already, whatever.
Yeah, might as well. That's wild. I don't have a barbecue here right now, but I'm surrounded by my cousins who all have barbecues. So I'm just going to sort of rotate around and be like, hey, can I use this for the afternoon? I'll do what I have to do. Grilling season, it's here. We're becoming that age where all we're going to talk about. Clearly.
Got to get, maybe you should alpha them all and get a Traeger and you can be the meat smoking guy. Just jump it. Just vault them in that stance. You can get the kiss the cook bib or whatever you call it, the apron.
Yep.
There's a lot we can do with this. Mm-hmm. But it's Big Dog Ball talk. Maybe we'll do big Dog Meat talk another time. Hey, yo.
Big barbecue, good
big,
barbecue and
big meat talk.
In Oklahoma City, big meat talk. As far as I know, I don't know about Indiana if they've got what the barbecue situation is there. Probably all right, but
Midwest. Yeah, I don't know what they would really like with their singing. I feel like they're a lot more like fried foods. That just feels like that's what they would have. I don't know. Yeah. If you're from Indiana, let us know. Cook. What's your signature dish? Yeah, at Big Dog Ball Talk. Let us know. I'd love to know, because then it'll give me more of insight if I actually want to eventually go to Indiana. Because right now I have absolutely no inclination to do so. I definitely don't want to go if their team is losing. The Pacers drop game 2 to the Thunder in a 123-107 beatdown. It was over pretty early. The first quarter things were close. They were competitive. The Thunder once again get up to an early lead. Pacers kind of fight back a little bit, but by the time it went to the half, it was kind of dead to rights. The Thunder got up to a little bit of a lead, but like at times this lead it felt like 25-30 points. It wasn't ever that high, but it really just felt like this Thunder team was in control the whole time. And once it got to the fourth quarter, I will say I still was like, oh, the Pacers made a shot. Maybe we'll see something. Maybe we'll get another crazy comeback. But the Thunder, they kept their foot on the gas. And pretty much everything that we kind of talked about, Jordan, like, things to watch for, things that the Pacers and the Thunder really needed to improve upon from game one, the Thunder really kind of took everything that we said and, and did that. Like, this one, Chet Holmgren, guy who we both, called out from game one after having a horrible performance in that one, 15-6 in this one, much more efficient shooting, 6-11 from the field. Still, only hits the 1-3, but he at least took 3. He increased his volume a little bit there. Jalen Williams, still struggled with his efficiency, but 19-5-5, solid outing from him. Then you look at the bench, like Hartenstein again, like it was really solid in this one, a little bit more of a role player than a scorer in this one. Caruso, big 20 points off the bench. He's been fantastic throughout this finals run. And then Aaron Wiggins, shining in this one. Maybe the new A Wiggins. I don't know. He might be stealing the mantle here. But 18 points in 20 minutes off the bench. Awesome game for him. And then you look on the other side. We kind of said, Halliburton and Siakam, we'll get into the Pacers, but Jordan, talk to me first about the Thunder, because, I don't want to get too off the rails here. What did you see from them that, really was the big noticeable difference from, that game one loss to this game two smack around?
Yeah, well, I mean, you said it. I think they nailed down on everything that they wanted to fix. I mean, the Chet thing was the most glaring, I would say. There's a few sort of glaring things, that sort of led to that close loss ultimately in game one. But Chet not being that reliable third scorer was one of the bigger ones. And he just looked more aggressive right from the start. He didn't even play that many more minutes. Like, I thought his minutes would be more in the 30s here, but the game was kind of in hand going down, the wire in the fourth quarter. He probably could have got there, but just 28 in this one. Like you said, the efficiency was there. He just looked more comfortable. Got on him for only I think he only even attempted 1-3 in game one.
Yeah.
By the first quarter, he had hit 2 basically. I think his foot was on the line for one of them. It was a long 2. But in the game, he only ended up taking 3. But right away, it was I think Dagnall and the Thunder were like, look, you gotta show that you're gonna take these shots when they're there for you, because they're gonna be there for you in pick and pop situations and sort of breakdowns and just make the Pacers adjust to you. And then from there, you can do other things. You can drive to the rim when you want. You can score inside a little bit. I thought he had a really good all-around game. He can still play so much better. He can still be way more of a factor offensively. But 15, you'll take that. And like I said, with SGA's performance in game one, he had a great performance, but he only had 3 assists. He wasn't really looking to get other guys involved. It was completely different in this one, where he still had it going from the mid-range, and he was getting to the rim being aggressive, but so many more times he was intentionally getting into the teeth of the defense and kicking it out for guys. Like, I thought Jalen Williams, even though he was only 5 for 14, I thought he had a really good game. Like, I thought he was out there doing a bunch of different things. He got to the line himself 9 times, made 8 of them. I thought he was just more aggressive, and 5 boards, 5 assists. Like, that's pretty typical for him. A big 19 points to really help. And you get that type of performance along with Chet scoring, then suddenly you have more than enough to go along with what Shea does to get over the finish line. And that's the thing with this Thunder team. It's like, they're a finals team. They're a dominant 68 win team. Williams and Holmgren are still like so young. It's like they're third and technically second for Chet's year in the NBA. And it's like, these guys aren't normally expected to contribute at this high of a level. So you do have to, I think we do have to remember to cut them a little bit of slack. But again, on the other side of things, this is the pressure that these guys want. This is what they expected to go and win a championship. We got to hold them to this type of standard. And these are more like the games that they have to play, in order to win at the highest level. From the SGA standpoint, I just thought it was just such a different focus on getting other guys involved. And I think one of the biggest beneficiaries of that was Caruso, who's so good at moving around in different spots. He played a lot of minutes with Shea in this one, and so many of his buckets, like I would say most of his 4 threes that I can remember, were off of Shea penetration or movement somehow that got swung around to him pretty wide open for the most part, and he was knocking him down. And yeah, same for Wiggins, exactly. So it's like, SGA is always going to be the motor that makes this team go, and I think he's so much more dangerous when he's focusing on being a distributor as much as possible, because that's an underrated part of his game. No one really talks about that as this, like, oh, Shea's one of the best passers in the NBA. I think that's one of the last sort of developmental things that he can add to his game. People also forget, even though he's the MVP, arguably like the best player on the planet, if you can make that argument, and at least certainly these last couple rounds of the playoffs, he's been fantastic. People forget he's also only 26 years old. Like, he still has things to add to his game. And sometimes I think he worries so much about, being aggressive in terms of his own scoring, and he forgets to get other guys involved like he did in game one a little bit. So yeah, this was just so much better. The defense, like, I can't even say that the defense that OKC played in game one was that much worse or it was bad. I think it was more of offensive issues that they were having, but the defense once again was locked down. Like, there was a play in the third quarter that I thought was just perfectly encapsulated what this year's Thunder team, represents, and what they do, especially better than last year, considering that they added Hartenstein and Caruso. It was Siakam coming down the right side, just past half court. Shea kind of walled off the sideline. Hartenstein snuck up, got the steal on him. Oh, I think it was Hartenstein that dove for the ball on the ground. They go the other way. Shea brings it up, gets kicked to Caruso in the left corner, back to Shea. And then Shea starts backing down. I think it was Nembhard that was on him. The Pacers have to collapse and send a double. And then it gets swung to the far corner to Caruso, who hits a wide open three. And it's like, this is exactly why they got these two specific guys who are going to fucking dive on the floor, going to play hard defense, every second of the game, but also are just really smart offensive players, which is what Sam Presti wants to invest in. Those are the type of guys he drafts. Those are the guys he targets. And it's just, this team was back to looking like themselves. And the last thing I'll say too, before we maybe get into the Pacer side of things, everyone was making this big thing all year, but after game one, where it's like, oh, OKC, for a young team, they're very composed in their post-game press conference. Nobody seemed rattled. Nobody seems like, oh, we let that one get away. Because this is the thing they preach all the time. It's like, stay neutral. Don't get too high, too low. Just be consistent with what you do, and things are going to work out in the end. And like, sometimes when you hear that, it's like, it's kind of like when people talk about fucking heat culture or all this stuff, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever. Like, any team can say that. I think there is some truth to that this team, for such a young team, is just insanely composed and just so good at staying level-headed. And so that was just a really impressive professional performance from them in game two. I think they've sort of re-snatched all the momentum, going into Indiana. And so, yeah, we'll see. It's still going to be a fascinating series here, but yeah, from the standpoint of answering the bell, doing what they needed to do, everyone did their job in this one.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, I think it's a good thing that you pointed that out, you know, the composure and the maturity of this young Thunder team. Like we'd said, you know, the second youngest team to ever make it to the finals. And I do think that a lot of this, you know, stems from, you know, SGA and his leadership on the squad, because even when he came into the league, very soft-spoken, very, you know, mild-mannered, just wants to hoop. Yep. He wasn't out there with all these crazy distractions that, you know, a lot of his peers, you know, his era, like, you know, the Zions and the Ja Morants, you know, all the distractions that these guys seem to bring, Anthony Edwards even. They all bring these, you know, a lot of fanfare, whether it's good or bad, along with them, whereas his is strictly hoops, strictly buckets, strictly, you know, finding ways to win and improve and get his team into the best winning situation as possible. And I think that when you have a big dog, an alpha on your squad like that, it's pretty hard to, you know, be a supporting cast member and try and stray from that norm. I think everyone else kind of falls in line, and that's why you can see a team where, you know, yeah, their best players are 26, 22, and 22, or whatever the hell they are, 23, which is, yeah, absolutely insane to think about in the modern game. And, you know, I also want to shout out to SGA before we, you know, start talking about the Pacers. Broke a over 20-year record here, most points ever scored in their first two finals appearances, set by Allen Iverson back in 2001.
Which is the standard.
Broke by 1 point.
Yeah, yes. But like AI, when the, you know, he went in and won that game one against the Lakers. They obviously didn't win another game, but like that. And
I
then,
think that was that not the only game the Lakers lost to that playoff?
I think
run?
So. I think so. But I just mean, like, if you're gonna break records, like in terms of scoring, like that particular record points through their first two games in the first NBA Finals. Allen Iverson is like the mythical, you know, person that it's like breaking like a Wilt rebound record or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we can hammer that point home enough. I don't think people, it pisses me off just because, Matt, you've sent me on a tangent that I wanted to get on here.
Let's go.
With SGA, we have to defend our Canadian. Mm-hmm. I swear I opened a post about that stat that he broke, and all the comments were like, look at the free throws. Look at the free throw attempts. You know, just basically, I feel like as a overall NBA fan base, like people watching the game, for some reason don't hold SGA to like that incredible, you know, put him on that level of these other great scorers that he's breaking their records. And I mentioned this year en route to Shea's MVP, like the, when you look at the scoring with the efficiency, with the fact that he's a guard and like the ability to get like 2.5 steals per game or whatever he averaged, the only comp for that in all of NBA history is Michael Jordan. Like that's the only real comp for it. And people, I don't know. I think he's still being underrated even as a scorer, like his best trait. And I just think that's crazy. Like that stat just demonstrates it more than anything. And the fact that he's still doing it in the finals, I understand it's against the Pacers, which I think a lot of us are still struggling to think of as a finals team, but they still fucking got there fair and square.
Yep.
And the fact that he's doing this, you know, in the context, you know, historically the best start ever is just, I don't think we can hammer that home enough, how dominant of a scorer this guy is.
Yeah. And again, I've talked about that many times on this podcast before throughout the season. This whole free throw merchant meme is really all it is just a meme, a bunch of fucking kids who don't actually watch the games. One guy said it, and now it's just become a thing. Like he shot 12 free throws in this one. He had 8 the game before. In game 5 against the Timberwolves, he had 4. He actually had 4 twice in that series against the Timberwolves. Like, he gets to the line, but again, if you watch basketball, if you understand the rules of the game, how the flow of the game is played, he takes it at the rim. He's not like all these other point guards in the NBA where they do is pull up from three, or all they do is drive and kick. He loves it. Like, he finishes really well with both hands. He embraces contact. He's not out there flopping. Like,
he's
crazy,
not like,
to me.
He's not like bad to watch. Like, sometimes the Jalen Brunson is annoying to watch.
Yeah.
And he's not flopping. He's not really foul baiting. Like, if anything, he makes really tough finishes where he doesn't get the call sometimes, and, yep, and he just kind of finishes through it. He's not like these other guys who are really searching it out. Like, he's not even like James Harden.
Doesn't throw his hands up?
No, no. So, yeah.
Again, James Harden, when he was putting up these crazy scoring numbers, his MVP season, I mean, like,
nobody
the
was
whole,
saying
the rip,
anything about
the rip
their free
through.
Yeah, yeah. They had to change.
I mean, people, like, yeah, people hated it.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah.
But it wasn't to this level. I just feel like at this point, like, yeah, it is discrediting SGA and his overall ability. And yeah, again, one of the best NBA seasons we've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact, I mean, we kind of called it halfway through the season as it was happening, especially when you pair it with how good he was last season. But this is better than anything that Steve Nash did. I know Steve Nash was two-time NBA, but like, or MVP, but like, and I know this has kind of been a long time coming, but we are witnessing the best Canadian to ever touch a basketball. You know, as far as we know, the best Canadian season ever. And it's looking like, you know, if all goes to plan, that it's going to be capped with the championship. And when you put him in the historical conversation, I mean, you talk about stats, very, very few guys have won MVP, scoring title, and, you know, a championship paired with a likely finals MVP. If OKC wins, he's more than likely going to get finals MVP.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, that is such rare company. Like, I feel like we're not, I think we do a good job of again, as a wider community, as sort of hammering down how good a guy like Jokic is and how unusual it is for a guy at his size to be such a good passer, all the things that he does well, how efficient he is, the video game like stats. I still feel like we just kind of gloss over SGA. And honestly, now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, we should have been even talking about him on this pod even more during the year this year. It was just the Thunder were just so dominant out of the gates that it almost felt like he lulled us to sleep a little bit. But it's like, it's actually insane how good this guy is, and the company that he will be in if he's able to finish the job. And you know, it's looking like they have all the ability to do that. We knew that going into this series. You know, I'm not counting the Pacers out by any means, but I just SGA, it's just fantastic. And I mean, this game, like, 34-8 in the finals on, I think he took 11 shots, missed 10, 11 for 21. Like, it's just, and not to mention he had four steals in this one and a block and a pretty insane block. When it happened, like, it's just, and five rebounds as well. Like, that's just insane. He's just so good.
Well, and again, like, even if we're just talking straight up, like, you're talking obviously you're growing the scoring title, you know, number one seed, all this other stuff, but like, just straight up, if he becomes the finals MVP, if they win the ring, he'll be the first player since LeBron James in the Miami Heat in 2013 to win MVP and finals MVP in the same season. And I'm pretty sure that list is very small of guys who have done it even ever in NBA history. So, yeah, it's just, I mean, Jokic, I'll give him that. He probably could have been in that, you know, the one year he doesn't get the MVP, gets it, Fugazi shit. you know, it is what it is. But, yeah, I think that, you know, SGA definitely, like, is going to be a guy that, you know, eventually people will begin to, you know, build around a little bit. But I think right now, maybe it is just the Thunder are so fucking good. People are still not really understanding that we are transitioning from the LeBron and Steph and KD era into the SGA era, really. Jokic, Anthony Edwards, all these guys, Tyrese Halliburton, who we're going to talk about here, like all these guys who are now the superstars. They are the face of the league. And I think that a lot of these people are just a little mad, they're a little petty, and I don't think they understand it fully, but I think that's partly what it's stemming from. So they're not ready to be like, this guy is, you know, one of the all-time best players we've seen in, you know, 20, 30 years, and that's kind of the history that he's making this season so far. But there's still a long way to go in this series, you know, only game two, so we won't get too far ahead of ourselves, even though I believe that little tangent may have done so. But let's talk a little bit about the Pacers here, Jordan. Obviously, a big step backwards in their overall production. And my biggest takeaway from this with them really was, I've noticed, and I think we've kind of said this in passing-ish, but not outright, you know, throughout the season. It's funny to me, the Pacers' biggest strength is also their biggest weakness in the sense that they don't have that alpha. They don't have that go-to guy to go and get them, you know, a bucket when they need it down the stretch of a game, or, you know, to halt momentum from another squad and turn the tides in their favor. This team, yeah, it's great. They're 8-9 guys deep. They play hard. They work well together. But when this team is on, they're on. And when they are off, they are so off. Yep. And in this one, it was tough to watch at times for them, because it was like, like Ben Mathurin, thank God for him in that beginning. Another Canadian boy, you know, was yep. hooping in the beginning of this game. Because Tyrese Haliburton going into the half, 3 points. Like he finished with a respectable, you know, 17-6. But like when you are supposed to be the guy on, you know, a finals team, it's a pretty bad look. And that's kind of the thing that we said going into the series, is that he was going to have games like this where he just doesn't really show up. And he in the second half, he kind of got it together a little bit. He hit a couple more threes. You know, he ended up finishing the night shooting over 50%. But, like, it was too little too late. Like, the stats he got really didn't matter. You know, and then you look at kind of the second fiddle, the co-star, another guy who we said, you know, as great as he is, and, you know, we were pushing that Hall of Fame envelope there for you, Spicy P. But it is the Pascal Siakam experience that he is going to not show up. He is going to choke, and he's going to have some bad games. And this was, you know, as bad as they pretty much get. 3 for 11 from the floor. You know, his defense was there, but, you know, it's not enough against a Thunder team that's this good. And yeah, 15 points, 7 boards. Like, it's just that's role player efficiency. And then again, yeah, it's just like, who's going to help? Naismith, Turner, Nembhard, like they've got all these guys, but none of them are going to be able to go out there and do it on their own. So yeah. I think right now, like it's just going to be about finding a way to get Siakam or Haliburton to just turn it on and be kind of get to that SGA level when they need to just take over the game. But I'm not confident either one of them in this finals are going to be prepared to do it. You know, I think Haliburton maybe down the line could develop into that guy. I think Siakam, we kind of know who he is at this point in his career. But yeah, it's just they. I think they are kind of that. They're missing that one X factor, and whether that's internally or they're going to have to look externally for someone like that, that is the biggest thing in this game that you know stuck out to me. And you know, the Pacers' lack of success.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, to be clear, you talk about jumping the gun. The Pacers could still win the finals, and then, you know, we'll have to eat our words about all of this.
SGA sucks. Free throw merchant.
Yes, but...
Overrated.
That's 100%. That was the thing going into the playoffs, coming down the stretch of the regular season, even when the Pacers were looking really good. It's like that is the problem. We have talked many times as Raptors fans watching Siakam's... whole career play out, that he is not like a number one scorer. That is not what his strength is. If you, I think you're capped if he's like your absolute best guy. Now here he is in the finals again, and I still think purely as a scorer, he is the best option that the Pacers have. Which, you know, to his credit, they got all the way here. With that being true, you look at the last series against New York. Similar in game one, obviously, big comeback, Tyrese Haliburton game winner. And then it was Siakam who scored like 39 or 36, whatever he had in game two. He was just awesome. So, you know, he can do it and look like that guy every once in a while. And in this context of this team where you have so many guys who can chip in from, you know, Haliburton to Nembhard to Nesmith to Turner, like anyone in that starting five on any given night can be their leading scorer. That's what makes this team so dangerous. And Tyrese Haliburton sometimes looks like he can be a number one scoring guy, but again, he's the most dangerous when he's got you know, double double with assists and is just as sort of aggressive as a passer and offense runner as a scorer. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, that was always the thing with the Pacers. That's why this is a shock to me that they are here in this position in the NBA Finals, already having won a game. Like this is a very outside the mold type of team. And again, like you said, their biggest strength being their biggest weakness. Like I think that's absolutely true. It's like there's a reason we don't see teams like this win the chip. Like when was the last time,
or you even get to the finals?
No. And in like I think the last time you had something like this was the Pistons in 04, who just had a really balanced starting five, much like the Pacers. But the biggest difference, the Pistons were fucking dogs defensively, and that's really that was their calling card. That's what made them a great team and what mm-hmm. allowed them to beat the Lakers in 04. That's what it was. And the Pacers, that was my biggest takeaway from their team effort last night. Wasn't even necessarily the offense and no one stepping up. Their defense was shit. Like they let up 123 points. I understand OKC's coming off a tough loss. They're going to throw everything that they have. This is almost a must win for them, but still mm-hmm. like, I thought Tyrese Haliburton played awful defense. He got blown by a shitload of times. Nembhard was still pretty solid, but outside of that, like I think Neesmith needs to be just even better than he was. Like he always brings it as well, but I thought he didn't have his best game defensively. Same with Pascal and Miles Turner. He also didn't provide that much. Anyone off the bench, like just start to bottom. I thought this was a very lackluster defensive effort from them. And that's the thing that they're going to have to, the question they're going to have to ask themselves, like, okay, we don't have this sort of go-to A1 awesome scorer. How else are we going to win? How are we going to slow them down enough and score enough points ourselves? And it's like, you know, I don't know what the answer is, because the thing is they have the ability to look really good defensively. Like, I think people underrate how good Indiana can look at the top of their game defensively when Turner's blocking shots and Siakam's being super switchable and Nembhard is getting under the skin of your best guard and like Jalen Brunson making him headbutt him. And, you know, a few times in game one, too, it looked like he was really working on SGA as well. Like, they can.
I think it was game one, was it not, that Shea kind of like shoved him a little bit there?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, they can be pests and irritants. They can't take a night off from doing that, because they're not like the Thunder, where they have all these gifted defenders who are just like absolute dominant at all times on the defensive end. The Pacers really have to try and be super connected. And it just looked like they fell apart on that end. And if they do that even once, I don't see them winning, that game, because that's just not their strength. And if they're going to have one of those games on defense and just not have anyone really come through and have a good night individually offensively, they're just not winning that game against the Thunder. It's not going to happen. We'll see. I think they're going to put forward a much, much better effort on both ends of the ball here in game three, going back home to Indiana. That crowd's going to be crazy. I think the last time you saw the Pacers kind of let go of the rope in a series was game five against the Knicks. When they went back to the Garden, and it looked like, the Knicks might get back into this series. And then game six, the Pacers really just looked like a completely different team. So I'm giving them the credit that might be true again here in game three. But like you said, you are going to need someone to step up and offensively at least try and match what SGA does. It's got to be either Pascal or Tyrese. Again, like you said, like that is, I don't care who it is, but one of those guys is going to have to go up a level. I don't think you're going to get another win, you know, in this series with a complete team effort, quote unquote, where no guy scores over 20. I think that was a bit of a fluky game where you fucking turned it over a million times and OKC just happened to not capitalize on any of those turnovers, where you get, again, this great shooting luck down the stretch from Toppin, from Miles Turner hitting these crazy threes, and you get back into the game. I don't think you're going to have those sort of crazy circumstances where you can have this completely spread out, wealth of guys. Like I obviously still use that as your strength. Like you still want the balanced scoring from all of your guys, from the bench and from the full starting lineup. But I really do think you're going to need a 25 point per game scorer here, and it can alternate who it is on a given night, but you're going to need that. I think to fully get you over the top. And I just don't know if the Pacers can do it. Like I'm really hoping the Pacers can put up a fight and at the very least, like make it close in game three, if not win it. And then failing that, win in game four. But I'm really trying to fight the suspicion here that potentially the Pacers don't get another win in this series, that maybe even though they went into OKC and stole game one, it's kind of now going to bite them in that OKC was kind of woken up to the fact that they blew a 15 point lead in game one of the finals, and they're not going to want to let that type of shit happen again. And so I'm hoping that's not the case, but to me, that's kind of what it feels like. I just think maybe the Pacers might not have anywhere else to go, just because again, already they don't have that dominant scoring type of guy. But even if you did have that, going up against the fucking OKC defense is just hell. Like the fact that Tyrese Haliburton has to deal with Lu Dort most of the game, and if not him, you've got Caruso. Oh, and if not him, Cason Wallace. If not him, Jalen Williams. The guy,
even SGA, man.
Even SGA, you can't even pick on him. Like, I actually, it's crazy watching Tyrese Haliburton, one of the, a fairly high usage player, not even want to dribble the ball up. Like, he's giving it to Nembhard and saying, you do it. And he only started getting aggressive in game two. Like, when it was too late, like in the
dude, he had a backcourt violation completely unforced just because he didn't even want to be near Caruso.
Yeah, so it's like that's tough. And then if you're looking at Siakam to provide those points, that's a whole other world of pain as well with their bigs, their wings. It's just it's tough. You know, I do not want to make this mistake of underestimating the Pacers, but it looks like OKC kind of got woken up here and might end up rolling. But you're just going to need much higher sustained effort defensively for the Pacers, and you're going to need someone to get hot. And also, too, you can hope that the role players for the Thunder aren't going to play as well on the road. I mean, this is a classic thing in the finals in any game, in any playoff series, that, you know, Aaron Wiggins, you know, the Joe, like these guys off the bench might not be hitting anything. And maybe you get some more help, like a TJ McConnell game would be very timely here, or another Obi Toppin, you know, good shooting game, a Mathurin game a little bit here. So there are some options, but, the Pacers got their work cut out for them for sure.
Yeah, 100%. But I'll say this: I will always, you know, I feel like they can get at least one at home. I do feel like they'll get one at home. I think they've got a good enough crowd. They're still a solid enough team, and you know, I think that's again, when you're the lower seed, if you can get that one on the road, like it gives you such a big confidence boost. You know, you can beat them in a harsh environment.
Yeah.
So you know, I think that they have the ability to do it. But I think game three will, you know, be a really big indicator of how the series is going to go. Like if the Thunder roll into town and they just kick the shit right out of them, game three start to finish, like how kind of game two went, then, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see, you know, game four go the same way.
Yeah.
But, you know, if game three can be competitive, no matter who ends up taking the win, I still think that, you know, the game four, they would have a really good chance of pulling that one out, because you know the stakes would be a little higher, because no one wants to get shut out.
No,
you know, on your home court in the NBA Finals. Like I know that the Pacers are a little bit more of a fan friendly, you know, ticket priced. You know, I think both these teams are, you know, the smaller markets. But even then, you know, it's a lot of hard earned money. I don't think anybody wants to send their fans home sad back to back in the finals. So but again, like you said, it is really, really tough. Because even when your offense is playing on par to the Thunder, you know, skill wise, like you still are playing an all time great defensive squad, maybe the best defensive team we've seen since the 2019 Raptors.
Thank you, Matt.
I think no that one, might be the no squad that might be the way one.
They should. Yes, 100%.
No, basically an all defensive bucks, team. Okay,
they were fine.
But the 2019 Raptors, insane. I think that we're starting to get there. We're starting to get some of these people looking
some
back
love,
now.
Yes.
I'm seeing it a little bit more often.
Because I mean, think about the seasons some of those players have had. The season Siakam has had, OG and Fred VanVleet and Norman Powell. People
have been saying if they never broke it up.
No, people are like waking up to the fact, like, oh, wait, they had both basically those guys off of their fucking bench, you know, with except for Siakam. That's a pretty strong squad. So, finally people are waking up to it.
But let us know what you guys think of Game 2, the NBA Finals, what are your predictions for Game 3 and beyond at Big Dog Ball Talk, X, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Everybody, give us your takes that make us quake.
Make me quake.
We'll be back. Yes, we will be back after Game 3 on Wednesday. So hopefully, you know, we'll have a little bit of a Thursday upload for you guys. Stay tuned for that one. Game 3 recap coming at you guys. Thanks for being with us once again. Matt Eichhorn, Jordan Flegel, Big Dog Ball Talk. And as my good friend Jordan always says,
why break my streak now? Fuck Brad Marchand, you little rat. Fuck you.
Oh, boy. That did suck. That did suck. I saw him get in the breakaway, and I went, not this fucking guy.
I know.
Rudy Gay style. And then it was the sneakiest little shit goal.
I know. It was bullshit. Yeah. And I didn't like how hard he celebrated. I mean, I would, too, after basically two periods of OT. But still, Oilers.
You seen his mom?
Yes. Let's go, Panda.
Well done, Brad. Say, shut up, lady.
He said after they asked what kind of a hockey mom she is, he said the one that you have to put a muzzle on. So I get where he gets it from.
Yes, but go Oilers. We're going to go up 2-1 tonight. Let's get her done.